you get it, I'm sure.
No, we have a very late arriving spring. There's just the slightest tint of it at the moment. Tulips are up, that's about it.
So it must be beautiful when that happens, when you get
Well, it
nice
does. It
weather.
all sort of bursts out at one time.
Lovely. Well, we've been testing our recording level while we've been talking, and everybody's very happy. So, if you don't mind, we'll go straight into the questions.
All right, fine.
So, Andy has been talking about the fact that his relative Eliza Ann was born on Sable Island, and he says there can't have been many babies born. So, what on earth were his parents doing? There can't have been many babies born on this barren piece of sand. So, let's see what we can do to answer his questions and find out more about the founding of a unique community on Sable Island. I'm joined on the phone now from Nova Scotia by Sheila Hurtle, who's the co-author of A History of the Place. Sheila, first of all, can we just pin down the geography before we move on to the history? Where exactly is Sable Island?
And it's a very thin strip of sand which was probably a terminal moraine left over from the Ice Age and is sitting on the very edge of the continental shelf, about almost 300 kilometers east of Halifax and about 160 kilometers south of the Cancel Causeway.
And
Cancel.
And what sort of surface area does it cover?
Not very much. It is a very long, if you can imagine two beaches back to back, it's a very long crescent strip of sand. It has dunes in the center. If you were to be thrown ashore on the north side and you were able to walk up the dunes, you would look down across all of this marram grass, which is essentially what holds the place together, across a sort of undulating slope to another set of dunes within a kilometer away, or no, perhaps a little more than a kilometer away, and then you have another beach, a south beach, which from there it's Africa, you know, there's nothing. It's very exposed, it's very windy, and the storms are absolutely horrific out there.
And yet, people must have been living on it then in the early 1800s.
Well, they were living there because there was a terrible, terrible shipwreck there about 1797 or 8, which involved some of the possessions of one of the members of the royal family. And the Lieutenant Governor of Nova Scotia at the time, Sir John Wentworth, he had been for some years pushing the idea of having a life-saving station out there, or at least a group of people who could help, who could succor the people who could get ashore and keep them alive until they could be transported to the mainland. And he, because of this terrible calamity, really, he was able to establish this. This was about 1800, so by 1801, he was able to send a man and his family, and I think he had three or four other men with him, but not their families, to the island to set up a community who would be there to aid anyone who could make their way ashore from a shipwreck. And he actually died in the saddle about 1809. His name was James Rainsthorpe Morris. Was a very well-connected man. He had been in the Navy for many years. He was a very capable individual. And I know nothing at all about the other people there at the time. But when he died, 1809, Edward Hodgson became his replacement. And I don't know anything about Edward Hodgson, but it's entirely possible that he would be the only person with a family out there at that time, because I understand that the establishment by its nature didn't change very much until the end of his tenure, which was in 1830.
So how many people would there have been there altogether living?
Well, with Morris, who we have quite a good record of, he had his own family there, which were two children, his wife. There were three or four other men. And then there was a family which they found out there when they arrived. Now, this family was there unofficially, presumably doing a little wrecking or presumably not luring people onto the island, but at least picking up the things that got washed ashore and making a bit of profit out of that. And they were absorbed into this group, so they couldn't have been criminals. So That's it. We have two families and three or four other men. And they, when they arrived, they brought everything with them. They brought domestic animals. They brought their tools for their housing, to build their houses. Their houses were semi-prefabricated, and everything went out by ship. And they waited around for a couple of days till the gale subsided, and then brought everything ashore as best they could in small boats and floated it. And then I think they just put the sheep overboard and let them fend for themselves, but they seemed to have an instinct to make for land, and started building a community. You know, they arrived in October, which is not the nicest time of the year out there, and managed to pull themselves together through. And they were there from then until he died.
So they were expecting it to be a lifetime contract, as it were.
I think so, yes. And I think it would have been a very attractive contract, although the life must have been very tough. It couldn't have been a great deal tougher than it was on the mainland and the exposed areas of Nova Scotia. It was hard, and I think perhaps the hardest part was what happened occasionally when they could do nothing for a ship which was going down. There's a description of some by one of the superintendents there of just waiting helplessly on the shore while a ship went across the bar, or went up against the bar, I guess, about 7 kilometers away. Because this island is about 25 or 30 kilometers long, but that's just the dune field. And then you have spits on either end, which are 5 to 7 kilometers. And then you have, beyond that, you have submerged bars, and it's virtually invisible. And it is the worst of traps because the tides, the sand shifts and moves. The island actually moves. It moves a little bit east, then it moves a little bit west, then it moves a little bit east. And the bars change all the time. It's uncharitable water, and it just seemed to lure ships onto it, and then they'd be trapped in the sand. And they could be literally miles from shore and going down.
And this is where the woman that Andy's ancestor married was lucky enough to be born.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the interesting things is that when those people who were there as children seemed to love it. They just thought it was heaven. And I suppose they had complete freedom out there because they were perfectly safe. They had ponies to ride. You know, the island has a herd of wild horses, which are quite unique. It's a wildlife preserve now. They had all kinds of ship's wreckage to play with, to construct into whatever world they wanted. They did have schooling, although I'm sure when there was only one or two children, it was mother who did the schooling. But when there were a number of children, they had a teacher. And when it came time for them to leave the island to seek a life of their own, they wrote about it. They wrote as if there was no place on earth like it, and they just longed to go back.
So we shouldn't feel too sorry for Eliza Ann.
No, I don't think so. No, I think she probably had a very, very interesting life.
And were they self-sufficient? How did they grow things on sand?
Well, that I don't quite understand. I'm told they would have had to transport whatever earth they had out there, but they did manage. They did raise hay crops. They did. They had a lot of domestic animals, and animals also seemed to survive very well on the marram grass because previous to the establishment, people had put cattle and swine out there to as a kind of larder for Portuguese or French fishermen on the banks, for instance. They didn't have to go all the way home while they were doing whatever they were doing, and they could go to the island. And because while it is virtually, it has no harbor, it has no easy landing on a calm day, it's not hard to get ashore.
So they must have lived on meat and milk.
Slaughter.
They must have lived on meat and milk.
I think so. They grew turnips and cabbages. And there were cranberries growing in all the... There are bogs. There's lots of fresh water. In the bogs, there are cranberries. And apparently, they did have gardens. In fact, they had at a much later date, after Hodgson, there was a case of a cloud of locusts d- d- destroying the gardens one year. Somehow, wherever they came from, they had this invasion of locusts.
And obviously nobody's living on it now.
Yes, there is. It's not accessible to the public except by permission, but there is because it's a wildlife preserve, there is somebody there, an operations manager, and there are some contract workers there on a rotating basis, and there's a sort of trickle of scientists who are doing observations on this, that, and the other thing, and there is still a community of sorts.
How did you come to write a book about it? You must have been fascinated yourself.
Well, you grew up in Nova Scotia, which I did, and you know about this place because it is sort of in your face, and it fascinates everyone. In fact, when I told my friends that I was going to be working on a book on Sable Island, those of them who had husbands said, "Oh, please take my husband. He's dying. He's been dying to go out there. Isn't there some way you can take my husband?" And it's very interesting to be there, and it's very exotic in its way, and it suddenly seems so fragile when you're there because it's just sand.
It's just real.
When there's a bad storm, you can feel the waves thumping on the shore when you're in the interior of the island.
Real planet, isn't it?
Mm.
One more question that the producer would like me to ask. He's just going to tell me what it is.
We need to get back to Eliza. Can you say something like, so in 1819, when Eliza is born, is it clear whether she's the daughter of lifesavers or the daughter of people who've been shipwrecked?
Okay, right. So, Sheila, so in 1819, when Eliza Ann is born, is it clear whether she's the daughter of some of the life-saving people or who might she have been born to? One more thing. I didn't ask that right. So in 1819, then, when Eliza Ann was born, would she have been born to some of the life-saving community, or would it have perhaps been her parents have been shipwrecked on the island?
I think it's possible. During Edward Hodgson's years there, they had 35 vessels wrecked, and apparently they saved over 1,000 people. And when you were wrecked there, if you were wrecked there in the winter, you would probably have to stay there until spring. So somebody who was in a womb could easily be born on the island. On the other hand, if she was a member of, or if she was a member of a family of the people who were there as lifesavers, she probably would be a daughter of Edward Hodgson.
Is there a way of finding out?
Yes, I would say the archives in Halifax would probably have some information on that.
Right. So, I mean, yes. I've talked as if she was brought up there, but we don't know necessarily. If she was shipwrecked there, she wouldn't have been brought up there then, would
That's
she?
That's true, and I do think you mentioned before that she had a brother who was born there a few years prior to her birth, so that she most likely was a child of the people who were working out there, and I would say the chances are 75% she would be a daughter of Edward Hodgson.
Could you use that information again if I ask you a different question? So that really does pretty much say that she must have been a daughter to one of the colony members rather than a parent's shipwrecked. So when I ask you whether she could have been born to some members of the colony or whether her parents were shipwrecked, you did beautifully say how people would be shipwrecked in their large numbers and have to stay there. But if you could sort of carry on and say, but we think she must have been born to the colony because she had a brother who was born earlier. Would that be okay?
Yes, sure.
Is there a way of finding out which may be the case?
Well, because I think you mentioned to me that she had a brother who was born there earlier.
I don't think I did. So, if you,
all right.
Anybody?
So, I you want me to
Nick has mentioned that
because she had a brother who was born there earlier. She was probably, most certainly,
Sheila, we missed the beginning of your sentence.
Okay.
Sorry.
If
you just say we believe that she had a brother who was born 3 years earlier, so that would indicate that.
Okay. Well, we believe she had a brother who was born 3 years earlier, 2 or 3 years earlier, and that would indicate that she was probably a child of a member of the establishment, and most likely that would mean that she was a daughter of Edward Hodgson.
Fascinating stuff. Thank you very much indeed, Sheila.
You're very
really
welcome.
Really nice of you, and we'll give your book a mention.
Okay,
with its
good.
Wonderful title, The Strange Origins and Curious History of a Dune Adrift.